Welcome to episode 11 of While I Breathe, the official podcast of the ACLU of South Carolina. I'm your host, Paul Bowers.
And I'm your host, Jace Woodrum.
Jace, we are about to enter a new legislative session.
And yeah, we are.
I have some feelings about that. I'm sure you do too. How are you feeling about the South Carolina legislature returning?
I mean, it feels scary. We don't often have really good policy for civil rights and civil liberties coming out of the People's House. And I also feel ready. We have been preparing for the session. We always prepare for it, but we have a really strong team who's going to be at the session, who's going to be at the State House all session long. So, you know, I'm scared and ready.
Well, today's episode is going to be all about what's coming next as we enter this next legislative session. To review, this is something I didn't know till I was an adult, a legislative session in South Carolina lasts 2 years. So we're talking about 2025 through 26. And before the legislature starts meeting again, they pre-file bills. So lawmakers will draft a bill, submit it in December, often as in this case. And so we've got this big pile of hundreds of bills, and our advocacy team has been sifting through those, reading them, trying to predict what will actually move and get a hearing, and trying to prioritize what matters most to us. So before we get into all that, I just want to talk a little bit about the State House. It's a place that you and I have both had, I guess, the pleasure of visiting a few times over the last few years. For a lot of South Carolinians, you know, we may have visited the State House on a field trip when we were in elementary or middle school, but for those who haven't returned as adults, how would you describe it? The environment, the vibe of the place, what's it like?
You know, Paul, I actually was a chaperone on my 9-year-old's field trip to the State House. And it was a really charming place when you go with a bunch of third graders. In part because they went on a non-legislative day. They went on a Friday, and it's a beautiful building. It's full of history. During the session, when they are in chamber, it is, for me, sensory overload. The lobby, which is, you know, that's why we call them lobbyists. It is a lobby in between the doors to the State House and to the State Senate. And it's full. It's packed with folks. There are sounds of bells going off. They ring a bell every single time there's a vote on an amendment. There's doors opening and closing, the ding of an elevator. I mean, it's just a lot of noise and a lot of people and a lot of action. Now, for a lot of people, that is energizing. It's like you're in the mix of where policy gets made, right? From Hamilton, you're in the room where it happens. This is the room. This is the building where it happens. For me, it's a little bit of an overload. What's it been like for you when you've gone?
Yeah, I have the same feeling that it would make a lovely concert venue. It's a beautiful place architecturally. There's this huge dome. There's a lot of ornate sort of ornament on the handrails, and the whole place is just kind of classic and beautiful in a certain way. The grounds are lovely. I have to shout out the groundskeepers who do a great job maintaining the azaleas and camellias, and even in the dead of winter, there are beautiful things to look at. But at the same time, as I'm walking in every time, I pass by these statues that are shrines to racists, segregationists, apartheid governors, slave owners. And it's just this really grim reminder of what this place was built for and what we are seeking to dismantle. So I have all the mixed feelings about that place. And then going inside, yeah, it is a constant stimulus. It is a lot of people trying to get each other's attention. But some days that's exactly where we need to be.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Paul, thanks for saying that about the grounds and the statues and the history, which is, you know, so painful to recall and yet so important to recall. And I guess one other thing I'll say for folks who haven't gone is that the first thing you do is go through security, yeah. which automatically kind of sends this unwelcoming message, especially for those of us, particularly people of color, who have had harmful interactions with police. And so we have a place that's called the People's House. It should be the People's House. And in many ways, it's as inhospitable as it's ever been.
Yeah. We're not doing a great job selling people on going to the State House right now. It is true. A lot to ask of people. And it's, you know, do not feel obligated. But there are times when it's worth visiting if you are able.
And maybe that's the reason why we need people to come. Yeah. Because if we're not there, the people in power aren't putting the needs of South Carolinians and the civil rights and the civil liberties of South Carolinians. They're not putting those first. So that's why we need you. Ignore all the scary things we said. Still mm-hmm. come to the State House.
Yeah, we'll be there with you. I think that's a good way to thread the needle. And if you come, you will probably meet our two guests today on the podcast. To discuss this upcoming session, we have Josh Malkin, our advocacy director, and Courtney Thomas, our senior advocacy strategist. And these are both brilliant people who spend a lot of time in the State House, in hearings, in the little conference rooms where committees meet. They are there constantly during the session. So if anybody knows what's going on and what's coming up, it's them. So I'm really excited to get into it with them and talk about what's coming. Josh, Courtney, welcome. Thanks for coming on.
Pleasure, Paul.
Thanks for having us.
Before we talk about anything super high stakes or serious, I just want to do a little batting practice, if that's cool with you, where I'm just going to throw some bills at you. These are real bills that I swear I am not making up. These are bills that have been pre-filed for this next legislative session. And I'll just mention them and give me your hot takes. Here we have House Bill 3578, requiring cursive writing to be taught in 2nd through 5th grade. What are we thinking, yay or nay?
I'm pro-cursive. I am. I think there's something very important about kids learning how to actually forge their parents' signatures with actual cursive. So it's a life skill.
I'm already putting a disclaimer on this episode that the views herein don't represent the organization, but that's, it is a potential career skill. So
I've actually thought about this bill quite a bit because Representative Rivers, who's the sponsor, is like one of the most interesting people I've ever met. I actually think like if we stop teaching kids cursive, we will just stop being able to read like older documents, right? I don't know if that's his rationale for filing this bill, but I do think it's important that kids learn cursive.
Yeah. I think it's also important for like reading letters from your grandparents, you know, when you get your birthday card in the mail, you want to be able to read that. So
yeah. Wow. I went straight into like forgery. There are sweet reasons to want to read cursive too.
You told us who you are, Courtney. We got you.
You're right.
All right. House Bill 3020, legalizing pinball for minors. Is it a yay or a nay?
I'm going to say yeah. Why not? I don't think any of the existing pinball machines I can think of are really in like dens of corruption or anything. I think it's fine.
I wish I could be less serious, but like pinball is a status offense in South Carolina, right? So it's like status offense is something that's only a crime if a child does it. So like taken into its logical conclusion, you're a kid who gets caught playing pinball and then you up in the Department of Juvenile Justice. Like what? Easy pass. Let's do it.
Yep. Yeah. That seems like a no-brainer. Let the kids play pinball.
Yeah.
House Bill 3370 would establish Gullah as an official state language of South Carolina, alongside English, which is currently the state language.
I didn't know we actually had a state language.
I didn't either.
Huh. I'm supporting this one. As a kid who grew up watching Gullah Gullah Island, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I am a Kumya, but I appreciate the Gullah Geechee people.
Yeah. Yeah, that show was formative. And even growing up in South Carolina, I think a lot of people didn't realize that, you know, Gullah Gullah Island is referring to real people in a real place.
Definitely for this one. Again, I hate to be the serious one in the room, but I just think, like, as we're seeing so many active efforts to erase history, I think really uplifting and emphasizing South Carolina's history is really important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One more. This is a doozy. House Bill 3314 would designate the restoration, exhibition, showing, and enjoyment of classic and antique motor vehicles as the official family-friendly pastime of South Carolina. Yay or nay?
It's going to be a hard pass on this one for me. I'm a no. Absolutely not.
Do you have an alternative family-friendly pastime you'd like to propose?
I mean, just about anything else. Bowling, maybe? I don't know. Cornhole? I don't know. Anything else.
I'm on team bowling for sure.
Well, let's get into some slightly more substantive bills. And Josh, you had the idea of leading off with some of the positive changes that are actually being proposed this session. I think we once we get into the middle of the session, we spend a lot of time dwelling kind of in the dark place. There are some really harmful things being proposed. But before all that, let's talk about some good ideas here. So one of our priorities as an organization is housing justice. And on that topic, you know, last year we talked a lot about eviction right to counsel, which the record I still think is a good idea, but it seems like there might be momentum on other ideas related to tenants' rights and housing justice in South Carolina. What's on your radar?
Yeah. And as I was thinking about this podcast, I think a general theme for me with both proactive and defensive legislation is like, we should just all be seeking to understand each other, right? And like, and build empathy, right? So we are hopeful that a bill that prioritizes the sealing of eviction records can pass. Right now, what happens a lot of the times is a landlord will, you know, check a tenant's record and see that they have an eviction on their record. And that's kind of like a scarlet E, right? They don't have a conversation about, you know, oh, you know, I got in a car accident and I didn't have the money to do car repair and pay my rent that month. So I think just creating a system where landlords and prospective tenants are having those conversations, it just seems like, you know, we have such an eviction crisis in this state that we should be seeking solutions and keeping folks housed.
You know, we talked about that on some of the first episodes of the podcast where, you know, one eviction is it's just this mark on your record and it affects people's ability to just find a home. We had one of our own legal interns shared his story about, you know, one eviction on his record that was he ended up fighting in court and, you know, not actually getting evicted. But it was still this mark that followed him around the state. That made it really hard for him to just rent an apartment while he's in law school.
Yeah. I think that's a running theme for at least two of the areas of our proactive legislation this session, giving people the opportunity to come back from, you know, circumstances or mistakes, or allowing people to move on with their lives. I think that's something that's really important. I know a lot of folks who are in our legislature purport to be, you know, members of the Christian faith. I think redemption should be a very big part of our policymaking. Allowing people to move on and just be human is really important.
There are a couple other interesting ones in here. One that was notable to me is House Bill 3569, which this one would allow survivors of domestic violence to break a lease without having to pay a penalty. You know, there are things you can do to make the housing system a little more just. And I'm heartened to see that people are putting good ideas out there before the session even starts.
Yeah. Intimate partner violence here in South Carolina is it's a huge issue that really reaches across race, across class. It's something that a lot of people I know personally have had experiences with. So I don't think, you know, the financial penalty of breaking the lease should be the thing that prevents you from getting safety for yourself or for your children. And it is something that a lot of people have experience with. And at one point in South Carolina's history, I think maybe 4 or 5 years ago, we were maybe number 6 in the country for women killed by men. So this is a really important bill. And I'm really glad that we're taking positive steps to protecting survivors.
It didn't take very long to get me to my normal baseline of rage, but I'm fairly certain that this bill was filed last session. And it's just like one of those, like the fact that this bill didn't pass, it's just mind-blowing, right? Like folks going through unspeakably hard things, needing to worry about whether they can like be safe.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that speaks to the priorities here, and it doesn't speak to them well. Let's talk about juvenile justice. I think this is another place where maybe Courtney, we can talk about this theme of redemption and healing, especially for kids in a tough spot. So South Carolina Department of Juvenile Justice has been in the news a lot this year, and not often for good reasons. Just the conditions there continue to be terrible. You know, we have physical conditions in the facilities where children are held that are still dangerous. And, you know, we have reports of children not receiving adequate care and health care while they're there. The staff have reported extremely high turnover. You know, they can't keep people on staff for even a year sometimes. So we do not always see eye to eye with the Department of Juvenile Justice, but there was one notable moment in the last session where we were advocating for the same thing as the director of DJJ, and that was status offense reform. So, Josh, you touched on it with the pinball bill, but yeah, remind us again, what is a status offense and what's one idea here that could help?
Yeah, so a status offense is something that only has a criminal penalty because of the status or age of the person engaged in that activity. So an example of that, like Josh said earlier, playing pinball is one of them in South Carolina, but also something like incorrigibility, or, you know, colloquially known as like disrespect. There's also truancy or running away. So things that are only an issue if you are under 18. And South Carolina is one of the few states left in the country that actually institutionalizes kids for these status offenses.
Hmm. So a change would be to find some other way to help kids who, you know, are either, you know, exhibiting incorrigibility or truancy, you know, something other than sending them to juvenile justice.
Right. And I've spoken to advocates in this space, and they always say that it's never just a status offense, right? So there's something else going on in that kid's life, something else going on in their family that they probably need assistance with. So maybe instead of institutionalizing a kid, instead of locking them up for running away, maybe try to address what's going on at home. There are a lot of folks who are invested in diversionary programs that would help families heal, but also allow children to receive the support that they need outside of the context of the juvenile justice system. Because we know that every single interaction with the criminal justice system is harmful to kids, whether it's just being held in confinement for a couple of hours while they're being processed, or if they're serving a year. There is still a impact on kids, regardless of the time spent.
Mm-hmm. Do we think there will be movement on that this year? Is there any energy in the State House to address some of these issues?
I hope so. I mean, there was bipartisan support on the Committee on Children earlier this year, and we actually saw a lot of lawmakers and department heads from different agencies actually sounding kind of angry, like, why are we doing this? Why are we locking kids up for things that they actually need help with? They need assistance. So I think the momentum is there. And I really hope that everyone involved, all of the adults in charge, could actually stop and think about the best way to help these kids rather than locking them up.
Yeah. One other idea I wanted to talk about. This is, well, we don't always talk about a ton as an organization, but people ask me about it a lot when I say I work for the ACLU. Marijuana. So we still don't have even legalized medical marijuana in the state. But every year, you know, there are attempts to legalize at least medical marijuana. I see, you know, a bill in the House, House Bill 3019, that would legalize, you know, medical marijuana for certain medical conditions. I know traditionally there's a senator, Tom Davis, who usually will push for some form of medical marijuana. What do we think? Is this the year? Could this be the session that it finally happens?
I'm not optimistic. I mean, the way that our state house works, you know, especially in the Senate, if you have a few folks who object to a bill, it makes it that much more difficult. And I really appreciate Senator Davis's steadfastness here. And, you know, he gets up there and he's like, I want this to be a really strict law. And he's heard his colleagues' concerns from law enforcement. But the folks that he's talking about are like kids who, you know, have seizures every 3 minutes, and veterans who suffer from PTSD. So again, just thinking about like understanding people and actually doing things to help people in need who may be different from us or suffer from things that we don't suffer from, I think it'd be really a great thing for the state to do.
Agreed.
Well, we're going to take a quick break here. I think I'm going to cut in for a little bit of levity. An audio clip of our attorney general holding forth about the most dangerous drug. Have y'all heard this clip?
No.
Oh,
what do you say?
For a treat.
Marijuana is the most consumed illicit drug in the United States of America. It is the most dangerous drug because it is the most misunderstood drug. Consider the following words used to by marijuana users to describe the state of being high. They use words like stone, high, wasted, baked, fried, cooked, chomped, cheeched, dope-faced, blazed, blitzed, blunted, blasted, danked, stupid, wrecked, and that's only half the words that they use to describe the state of being high from marijuana. Are these the words that are used, are they consistent of something that describes a medicine?
And we're back. So one feature of this legislative session is that there will be some real reality TV style drama going on in the halls of the state house once again. And part of it, we know, will revolve around sort of ongoing beef between the South Carolina Republican Party as a whole and this sort of clout chasing, freedom hating faction called the South Carolina Freedom Caucus. We've talked about them on here before. We don't need to give them a ton of airtime, but there is friction there, and they have their own agenda. And I wanted to just do a little bit more batting practice. I'm gonna throw a few Freedom Caucus sponsored proposals at y'all, and you can give me your thoughts. Maybe there's something good in there. We'll see. Classroom censorship. This one is from the esteemed Representative Josiah Magnuson of Spartanburg County, House Bill 3185. This would place some pretty vague limits on discussions of race and history in public school classrooms. It sounds weirdly familiar, but yay or nay?
No.
That's a no? It's a no for Courtney.
It's a big ol' no.
Yeah, and just to absolutely not. This is, you know, a fight that we've been fighting for the last 3 years. I think something that legislators don't often understand is that the language of the bill doesn't control how it will be weaponized. So there are folks who can read some of these bills and say, oh, facially, this doesn't seem that problematic. And I would take issue with that. I think the language of this bill is problematic. But we've now, you know, been living in this four-year period of the CRT craze, and we see how the folks who attack history operate. And the language of the bill doesn't ultimately matter, right? It's the animus behind it that is, it's what's problematic. And our legislators really need to, you know, say this is a huge threat to our, you know, public educators, and educators are being harassed for things. And kind of, I would love to see folks just kind of like speak out against legislation like this and speak in defense of our incredible educators.
Hear, hear. The Ten Commandments. We all know them, I think, by now. So there is a bill, House Bill 3217 from Representative Thomas Beach of Anderson County. This requires a framed copy of the Ten Commandments to be displayed in every public school classroom. What do we think? Yay or nay?
No.
It's a no?
No. Why? No. No. I just, there's so much, like, I just, let's play it out. Let's say the Ten Commandments are in classrooms. What kind of frame? What kind of frame is it? There's a line in the bill that says you have to accept any offer of a privately donated poster or framed copy, given that it, you know, fits the requirements. Ridiculous. Ridiculous. I would love to hear a third grader ask what coveting means.
Mm-hmm.
Why just your neighbor's wife? My neighbor has a husband. Like, what's the difference? Mm-hmm. What's a manservant? What's a maidservant? You know, I just, this is so silly. This is ridiculous. No.
Yeah, I'm a pass on this one.
That's all right. We don't want to get you wound up.
Yeah.
Yeah, my sort of thought following up on that is, have y'all ever tried to frame something? You know how much, you know how expensive it is to get something framed at Michael's?
We
gotta fund this, you know. It's a problem.
Ooh, another unfunded mandate.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea how expensive it is to frame something at Michael's.
Not cheap. Not cheap. Not cheap. That's where they get you. Closed primaries. So this is from one Representative Mike Burns of Greenville County. A lot of upstate folks here represented. This is House Bill 3310. It would require people to register with a party in order to vote in a primary. What do we think on that? Is that a yay or a nay?
No.
Surprising.
No. Well, let's give people like a little context, right? What was happening in the Greenville and Spartanburg Republican Party, right? I think it was maybe 3 or 4 years ago. There was a hostile takeover of the Greenville Republican Party from the far right wing of the GOP. So I think this closed primary is them settling scores, but also I think it would grossly disenfranchise most South Carolinians, right? Because right now we're sitting in a supermajority in the legislature. So that by definition means that one party is ruling what happens in South Carolina. But if I'm not registered with that party, I can't have a say who represents me. That makes no sense. It's ridiculous. And it's petty too, to be clear. It's very petty.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the maps are drawn such that I want to say there's like maybe fewer than 10 legislative seats that are actually like, you know, up for grabs every election. So yeah, closing the primaries would tell people in those, you know, 150 other seats that they don't have a chance to vote for who's ultimately going to represent them.
One more. This is one more Freedom Caucus joint. This is House Bill 3324 from Representative Bill Chumley of Spartanburg County. This would require the construction of an African American Confederate Veterans Monument on the State House grounds.
Respectfully, Bill, do you think they wanted to be there? Do you think they signed up, or were they like conscripted by nature of their enslavement, Bill? Why do you think they were there, Bill? No!
That's a no.
Sorry, I'm yelling. No. No.
No, thank you.
Yeah. We have so many statues to clean up on the State House grounds as it is. I don't think we need to be littering the grounds any more than we have. So that's 0-4 on Freedom Caucus bills we've addressed today. Yeah, maybe we'll find common ground one day. I don't want to rule it out. But I'd like to return to some of the longer bills, some of the ones that really seem like they might have some momentum this year. And this is where we're getting into some of the darker territory for the session. These are some really dangerous bills being proposed. So I want to start with what appears to be a top priority for this coming session, and that is school vouchers. School voucher is a way for the state to provide some form of public funding to private schools. And in our case in South Carolina, that would mean well over 2/3 of those being religious schools. And this is something that I've followed for a while because in a past life, I was an education reporter. I'm a dad of public school students now. And I remember so many iterations of this fight. Back in the 2000s and 2010s, there was this out-of-state real estate guy whose name was, I kid you not, Howard Rich, which is one of those sort of perfect literary names. And what he did was he pumped a ton of money into elections in South Carolina. He would give money to candidates who he believed were going to get a voucher bill across the finish line. Spent more money than you or I will ever see as some, an out-of-state New Yorker trying to buy a voucher bill in South Carolina, and still lost. It never passed. It's not really something that most South Carolinians have an appetite for. And this idea, this meme, sort of comes back again and again. And during the pandemic, we saw Governor McMaster try to divert COVID relief funds from public schools to private ones. That was struck down by the court. More recently, the latest billionaire trying to back this is a guy whose name I should look up how to pronounce. It's either Jeff Yass or Jeff Yass. We'll call him Yass King for now. He is, backed this latest push. And so, now we are, I think, on round three of the legislature trying to pass a voucher bill that gets around the state constitution. One thing about South Carolina's constitution is it specifically says the state cannot directly fund private schools. And so they've tried to find creative ways around that and so far been unsuccessful. Wanted to sort of tee it up for y'all, given that long rambling history, what is on your radar for school vouchers this year? What can we expect to see on that front?
Yeah, I mean, we obviously, it's a priority, right? They've already came in to discuss it before session officially begins. I think there will be a tension between a cap on the number of students who are eligible for vouchers versus what is called universal vouchers, where every student would hypothetically be eligible for a voucher. I think there could be some tension between the chambers there. But as you were mentioning, I think this is the influence of money in the lobby at its worst, right? Other states have done this. We know this is bad policy. We know this leads to discrimination. We know this doesn't lead to better educational outcomes. We know this leads to fraud. There's so many reasons that have already been proven to show the problems with voucher schemes. And yet, as you were mentioning, these folks who are out of state are just pouring so much money into elections and into lobbyists. We could be spending our time actually funding public schools and giving public schools the resources that they need rather than spending, yet another month-long round of debate on diverting money from our public education system.
It's strange that it's a very open secret that this money is coming from out of state to fund this fight. It's not something that is hidden or anything like that. But our legislators seem to be okay with money coming in for this particular issue, but anything else that has the stank of another state on it or other outside quote unquote interest groups, they're just absolutely against it. So I think it's interesting how they pick and choose what kind of outside influence is allowed in South Carolina politics.
Yeah, it's a very selective outrage for sure. So I wanted to talk a little bit about just the effects of school vouchers and, in other states, as you mentioned, where this has happened, it's a money pit. It's led to massive budget deficits in states like Arizona. It's led to declining test scores in many cases. If test scores are your jam, it also just opens the door for fairly open discrimination. You know, if you look at just the student handbooks of schools that are eligible for vouchers, you see these are schools that have religious tests for, you know, being a part of the school. They are also schools that very explicitly exclude LGBTQ students. You know, this is, we are proposing funding places that are not welcoming of all South Carolina's children.
Yeah, I think a really interesting piece here, again, is talking about like trying to create sound policy, which I think vouchers is such a far cry from that. But the accountability piece, right? That's another tension that's existed within the majority party is like, okay, we're saying our public schools aren't working, but we're not going to have any sort of accountability for the private schools that are, you know, operating under the voucher scheme. So we won't ever be able to say that this option is better, right? It's just, it seems like such a clear whiff at sound policy, right? We can't control apples and oranges if the oranges don't have to be accountable to anybody.
Yep. Good metaphor there, Josh.
Yeah, I swear to the miss. I'm glad you can.
I enjoyed it. I don't know. I liked it. Yeah.
But yeah, very true. Yeah. There's going to be no point of comparison because they don't want to really measure success. It's explicitly being left off in these bills. Let's turn our attention to reproductive justice. So like a lot of states after the fall of Roe, South Carolina has passed more and more restrictive bans on all sorts of reproductive health care, including and especially abortion.
The impact of that has been, it's devastating, truly, for people who are seeking care, but also for medical providers themselves, right? There are people who don't want to practice medicine here in South Carolina for fear of retribution, for fear of punishment, for fear of having their license revoked. But also, you know, bans like this show that you don't trust medical professionals to do their jobs, because abortion is medical care. So by banning it, you're really saying not only are you not allowed to control what happens to your body, but also doctor, nurse practitioner, you are not trusted to do what you've gone to school to do. So I think there are really far-reaching implications for the healthcare field, our individual rights, our bodily autonomy, but also our state economy too. I mean, abortion and other reproductive health care, it's also a financial decision for folks. We already know that children live in poverty at a very high rate. I believe it's still 1 in 4 here in South Carolina who live in poverty. So you have people who are making the decision about whether or not they want to grow their family or have a family at all. And this current bill is absolutely devastating already. And the idea they want to go farther is just atrocious.
Yeah, there are a few bills. It seems like they're taking different approaches to it. But one is House Bill 3457, which is essentially a full abortion ban. There's an exception only for certain categories of medical emergencies. There's another 3537 that would establish fetuses and embryos as people for legal purposes and treat abortion as homicide. Even as we're seeing the devastating effect of the current ban, our lawmakers are already ratcheting up, trying to restrict healthcare even further.
And I think to Courtney's point, I mean, I think it's always important to like zoom out and really think about long-term consequences. There's like bipartisan push to have young women go to school outside of South Carolina, right? Democrat, Republican, they don't want their daughter, you know, risking death, severe injury, because they, you know, got pregnant. So I think, you know, the brain drain is going to be real. The number of students applying to USC and Clemson, you know, it's going to be real. It's just, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll remind listeners, we've got an episode in the archives. If you want to go back to episode 4, that was an interview with an OBGYN talking about some of the difficulties that have arisen in her profession, along with a husband and wife who had to travel out of state to seek a life-saving abortion. And it is one of those concepts that, you know, you can talk about in the abstract, but when you actually hear from people who are facing turmoil in their personal lives, professional turmoil as a result of this, you can't look away. You recognize we are already in a really difficult place as a state. Well, one more area that seems to be a hot topic this year is diversity, equity, and inclusion, commonly referred to as DEI. And this seems like it has become one of the main boogeymen for a lot of lawmakers lately, particularly when it comes to higher education. So for starters, what is DEI? What do we mean when we say that? And what sorts of restrictions are in the works here?
I'll get us started on this one. So DEI stands for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. And it's just meant to ensure that students from diverse backgrounds have what they need, right? Like a good educator of any level, that's what they strive to do. You know, Black students, immigrant students, rural students, veteran students, they're going to have different needs. And DEI is essential to making sure that those students' needs are seen and realized. So, you know, it's one of those terms that's been co-opted by, you know, the radical right and trying to convince white people that we are somehow like under attack. I don't, today as a white man, I don't feel under attack. I think it's really dangerous that a predominantly white male legislature is saying like inequalities stopped existing and we shouldn't be talking about equity. I think we are still a far way off as a nation from realizing equality. And if we want to reach equality, which I think that I would hope our legislators do, we need some equitable measures in place. We have systems in this country that treat people differently based on how they look, based on how they love. And erasing knowledge of those systems will only make the inequalities worse. So I want to say, like, we watched this fight play out last year, and I'll give Chairman McGinnis and Chairwoman Erickson credit. They listened to professors about how DEI works and why this legislation is not needed. They did work to make a bill that was narrower in scope. So I always want to shout out legislators when they hear from experts and they respond. But again, we're back to that animus, right? It's, we know how this bill in any form will be weaponized. And it will have a chilling effect regardless, right? Like, that's the other thing. 2 years ago, I want to say, the Freedom Caucus made a huge circus out of attacking DEI via the budget process. Nothing came of that. They were sat down pretty curtly by their Republican colleagues because it was just a stunt. And still, the University of South Carolina changed the name of its DEI office, right? So the language, again, we're in a situation where the language matters less than the animus. And I hope that our legislators can understand that. And I also, like, I want to call to action for folks and institutions in this state with power. Don't give in to tyranny, right? Like, folks will hear whispers of a threat and they'll like change their behavior. No, like, we stand up to the bullies in the room, and that's how you defeat tyranny and authoritarianism and bullies. We don't like hear that a legislator with very little political power doesn't like something we're doing, so we're going to stop doing it. No, you're the experts. You know how to best serve your students and attract the best faculty, and you know, stay strong in your convictions.
I've got maybe the hardest question of the day. This is hard mode. In one word, can you describe how you are feeling about this upcoming legislative session? One word.
This is incredible because I asked Courtney to answer a question in one word last night, and she answered in 7 words. I told her I would never ask her to do that again because her answer was so good.
why do you do this to me?
Sorry, it's hazing. I know.
Okay, fine. Anxious.
Fair enough.
I'm anxious.
Worried.
I'll say I'm ready. And maybe this is That's confidence good. I'm borrowing from y'all. I feel like we are as ready as we can be. I'll pull some South Carolina trivia on this. So we have two state mottos for whatever reason. One of which is, as we know, while I breathe, I hope. The other is ready in soul and resource. And I don't know. Maybe we lean into that this year. We are as ready as we can be.
That is new South Carolina trivia for me. I did not know
that. We got a lot of lore here, you know. I'm still learning it.
Well, and Paul, can I make a plug for our advocacy team here?
Yeah.
We as a team, as an organization, really believe in the power of people. So we are going to have opportunities throughout session that gets information out to people, both about what's happening at the State House and the variety of different ways that they can engage both locally and with us in Columbia. So I really encourage folks to stay tuned. Paul will do incredible work sharing updates about what's happening in the State House. And we are always ready to hit the road and come be with people in community. So please do not hesitate to reach out. We will happily come be with you and share some updates in person as well.
Yeah. Yeah, if people want to get involved, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention we have a volunteer interest form. So that's on our website. If you go to aclusc.org/volunteer, you can just put down your contact information as well as the specific areas you're interested in getting involved with. And when opportunities come up to show up for those rights, we'll let you know. And then, yeah, on the website, I run the blog. That's part of my job. And so if you go to aclusc.org, starting in January, I'm going to bring back the State House Dispatch blog, which is just, you know, near the start of every week, I try to present a roundup of what's coming, what kind of hearings are happening in the State House, and you know, there'll be calls to action as those come up. But that's if you really want to get in the weeds, if you want to know what's coming, that's where you can do so. So I wanted to thank both of you so much for spending the time, Courtney and Josh. Thanks for being here and thanks for doing what you do, and thanks for being who you are.
Thanks, Paul. I got
you, Paul. Thanks for having us.
Y'all, thank you for listening to another episode of While I Breathe.
Can you give me, in one word, how you are feeling about this upcoming session?
I'm going to cheat. I'm going to say giddy up. Man, listening to Josh and Courtney, it actually just makes me feel fired up. Like, we are ready to take this session on. So they might feel nervous and anxious, but I feel prepared and ready.
I like that. That's I think giddy up counts as one word too. I'll let that slide.
I appreciate that.
If people are listening and, you know, they've heard all this, I'm sure, you know, there are a few issues that are near and dear to people's hearts, but they might not know what to do. What can we do? What's some action we can take going into the new year?
Yeah, I mean, one thing, we always talk about volunteering or we talk about donating or whatever, but one thing that I really want folks to remember to do come January is pay attention. Because right after President-elect Trump is inaugurated, all the attention in the room is going to go to the national level. It's going to go to Congress and the Trump administration. And look, that is all important stuff to pay attention to and to push back against. But we cannot forget how much impact what the state legislature does, how it impacts our lives. So I got to tell folks, pay attention and get involved because we need you. And until next time, while I breathe, I hope.
Pop quiz, do y'all know the state beverage?
Milk.
Mm-hmm. But we also have a state hospitality beverage.
Sweet tea.
Oh, Courtney knew this.
Oh, yeah. Our state shell is a spotted olive. Our state animal is a white-tailed deer. Our state flower is a yellow jessamine. Let's go.
Let's go. Courtney just put us all to shame with the South Carolina bona fides.
I'm floored.
The most South Carolinian person on this podcast.
Amazing. Yep. Amazing.